Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Episode 1813 here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. My name is your name too. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you had a blessed week and a great and safe weekend. Today's show took a little bit of a turn from where I thought I was going to take it. I was going to be talking about Second Amendment issues, because there's a lot of that going on in the news cycle. But then I got a call from a patriot today, said there is a presentation that's going on over in Coeur d'Alene, not too far away from the Redoubt Ranch, within an hour, less than that, a little less than 45 minutes or so-ish, that this guy is going to be talking about a merger with the regional power company. The prevalent power company is Avista. They are being bought out by a Canadian firm, which is bent on implementing their green agenda, Agenda 21, right on down the line. And so this has affected all of the people that are within this Canadian power companies' reach are being very adversely affected, especially in the rural areas. And now they are reaching into the American Redoubt states. All of the states I've seen listed except for Wyoming, not sure where they stand yet, but this affects you wherever you are. These guys are reaching down into the United States and they're buying up American power companies. And they're implementing a green agenda that is, in some cases, driving the power bill up 1,000%. So imagine your power bill, whatever it is, times it by 10. And that's what's happening to people in Canada by the same company who is buying out all everywhere. Well, their history is that they have been just the power bills alone, not to mention the rest of the agenda. Well, there's a presentation coming up this week, so I thought this is so timely. He's doing several presentations. You'll get to that in segment 2 and 3. We're going to be talking to a geologist who's very studied in this area. So we'll get to that. And then in the fourth segment, I wanted to put something out, a video that Pastor Shahram Haidian has put out, more about the war on Christianity from the left communist Islamo partnership, along with the SPLC, the ILC from down south. So anyway, this is a little bit different than what I was going to cover, but we'll get into the news and commentary right now. News and commentary brought to you by the author Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series. First, write up, go to 299days.com to learn more about that. That's the website. Okay, so your update from South Africa. Sidelanders wants to say thank you, all of you out there who have helped those folks in preparation for civil unrest, which is now appears imminent. The time, they bought some borrowed time, and I hope you guys enjoyed that interview from last week. That was a kind of a different, odd presentation because, well, it was Easter Sunday, and we were celebrating Resurrection Day. I was at the senior Schmidt's house having dinner, and it was such a great time. It went long. So I got in just enough time to take the previously pre-recorded interview with Simon Roach from Sightlanders and hurry up and slap that together and get that airing and get it uploaded for you guys. So that's why that turned out that way. And actually, I didn't get to I didn't get in time to put that together last week. It was like right on the money. It was just enough time to re-air Saturday's show while I frantically worked to put together the interview with Sidelanders. So lots of positive feedback, or just concerned feedback. People are saying, "Wow, this is just bad, dire." But Sightlanders says, thank you very much. They asked to please pass this along. They're rapidly approaching their fuel goals, because fuel is such a major component to their survival plan. So that news. They've also purchased radios. They've started to purchase more radios. It's very strategic for them. And I'm continuing to dialogue with those folks, see if there's anything that we can do to help. Now, also in the news, your South African update, got a letter, little testimonial here, because of a listener in the audience. I know there are several out there who have friends in South Africa right now. There's a missionary over there. There's some other folks that just have friends, acquaintances from that they've met online over the years, and I want to pass this along. Hi, I just thought I would let you know that I have made contact with Sightlanders, the leader in my city. His name is, and I'll omit that, thanks for getting me started. This is a single mom with two teenage daughters. So you can imagine what she must be sensing right now, seeing what's happening. But I'll continue on reading. I just read this morning that the reason farm murders don't make the news in South Africa is because the SABC, our national state-run broadcasting corporation, don't think that farm murders are worth reporting and that they give South Africa a bad name. They threatened to fire a Jane Smith, the reporter who reports these things, and asked her bosses why none of her stories ever got aired. They destroyed the tapes, too. I am trusting God for supernatural healing and restoration for our land, but I want to be prepared in case of emergency. So I will soon be signing up for the Nude SMS, that's their alert system, their texting alert system, and start to pack an emergency bag for me and my girls. Love, a South African concerned citizen, single mom. So there's your update from South Africa. Hope you like that. Now from Reuters. This is very cool. Hungary, the other land of the free and home of the brave, fighting against a storm from Eastern Europe or from Western Europe, the European Union. Hungary's prime minister, Viktor Orban, he has won his third straight term in power in Sunday elections after his anti-immigration campaign message secured a strong majority for his party in parliament, granting him two-thirds of the seats based on preliminary results. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban addressed the supporters after the announcement of the partial results of the parliamentary election in Budapest. The right-wing nationalist, I love that, right-wing nationalist. Now, remember, Hungary is the nation in Europe who said, we are sealing our borders and we're not going to participate with your little immigration of this Muslim invasion experiment. And of course, to which the rest of the European Union fell all over themselves and accused Hungary of hate and intolerance and Islamophobia, while they deal with more stabbings, more vehicle running down citizens, more attacks, more rapes, more just ugliness at the hands of their Muslim refugee invaders. So the Czech Republic and Poland are pretty much right there with Hungary, but Hungary leads the way. And as you might recall, we covered this in 2012 and have referred to it many times since, Hungary is the only nation in the world that I know of. In 2012, they adopted a new constitution where it clearly states that they are a Christian nation, going back to their roots, recognizing their roots. And they've stuck to that. And they said, we are a Christian nation. And to allow hundreds of thousands of unvetted Muslim migrants to just waltz in here because they say they want to come here would forever alter the demographics of our nation. And it would threaten the demographics as a Christian nation as well. So no, we're sealing our borders. I love it. He was reelected because of that. See, people get elected when they stand for principle. And that's what's happening here. You can never win on that. You must compromise or you'll never win your election. Well, not true. So the European Union has struggled to respond as Orbán's government has, in the view of its critics, used its two landslide victories in 2010 and 2014 to erode democratic checks and balances. What they mean is to get rid of mob rule and restore the rule of law. I love it. The victory could embolden Orbán to put more muscle into a Central European alliance against the European Union's migration policies. No kidding. It's a acceptance of invasion policy, more like it. Orbán, Hungary's longest-serving post-communist premier, opposes deeper integration of the bloc, and teaming up with Poland has been a fierce critic of Brussels policies. So, outstanding. Outstanding. Here's something else that's outstanding. A little closer to home, a sheriff with some guts. This is from the Ledger Inquirer. I've never seen this before. I've seen this actually a few different online sources. Harris County Sheriff Mike Jolly has a message for visitors. The citizens are armed, and if you commit murder in this county, well, the citizens just might kill you back themselves. Now, he says this is just a tongue-in-cheek statement, but he, at his own expense, puts up a sign every 7 or 8 months or so. He puts up a new one. And I said this is just a tongue-in-cheek, basically recognizing that the huge amount of citizens there in their county have concealed weapons permits. So it was a kind of a put-on notice for would-be criminals. I love it. But this is really important, too. I was going to go more in-depth in this, and, of course, also the invasion of our own southern border that we've seen unfolding in the news in the last week with this huge convoy. I'm not going to get to that story. I'm actually doing some research on the laws. I was talking to Chris Ann Hall this week, and we were discussing, I was asking her, where does, you know, she's kind of upset because, you know, President Trump is deploying troops. And she, you know, being a strict constitutionalist, which I admire, says, the Constitution says that Congress may call up the militia to repel invasions, not the president. So my question was, what happens when the Congress abrogates their duty to call up the militia to respond adequately to an invasion as the president and the commander in chief of the military? Does he not have the authority to call up the militia to immediately repel an invasion? So this discussion has been going on this week. It's very interesting. And so, I want to know, you know, where we stand, because we have the Oregon governor saying, we're not going to send any of our troops that you've called up. So where's this going to go? Defunding? I would say defund. Defund the National Guard in Oregon or any state where the governor refuses to send troops to secure our borders. That's the fundamental duty of the federal government, is to protect and secure our nation. So anyway, this is quite a debate. Others are saying, see, now I said I was going to get into this, but I'm not. I'm going to save it for next week, and here I am getting into it. But I couldn't help myself, because we're firm believers in the 10th Amendment, the rights of the states to assert their sovereignty, right? They're sovereign, independent, separate republics, self-ruling republics, like a bunch of little mini countries. That is how the United States is supposed to function. It is a republic. It is a federalist, dual federalist system. So what happens when a governor asserts they're under the 10th Amendment umbrella, saying we're not going to send troops? But see, that is something that the federal government has a duty to do, is to call up the militia to defend our borders. I say, if they're not going to let the National Guard deploy, then use the irregular militia. Use the citizens militia. Why not? But I say defund the National Guard for Oregon. Take back every Humvee. Take back every piece of equipment that was paid for by federal dollars. And you don't have to follow those orders. You don't have to send them to help Trump secure our borders. But we're taking all of our toys. How's that? Anyway, very interesting discussion. But here's another little storm brewing from InfoWars. Residents of Deerfield, Illinois apparently have 60 days to turn in their assault weapons. This was, of course, from earlier this week. So they have less than 60 days or face fines of up to $1,000 per day. The Village Board of Trustees passed an ordinance which banned certain types of so-called, quote-unquote, assault weapons and large capacity magazines, including the Ruger 10/22, which can accept magazines that hold more than 10 rounds. So I guess the Ruger 10/22, American household staple, is now an assault weapon. Of course, the AR-15 is also an American staple, but the Ruger 10/22, semi-automatic pistols that can hold more than 10 rounds have also been banned. Is there a semi-automatic pistol that can't hold more than 10 rounds? Law enforcement and retired law enforcement members of the community are exempted from the ban. Of course, they're superior, right, in all ways. Residents will have to either sell the weapons, transfer ownership to someone living outside of the town, turn them into police, or pay the exorbitant fines, which range from $250 to $1,000 per day per gun. Well, some people are already saying they are not going to comply. And April 19th is coming up. We remember the battle at Lexington Green and the bridge at Concord. Could this be another? What's their deadline? June 13th is the deadline. Maybe that will be the next Lexington Green in Illinois this time. They're asking for a fight. This is exactly what kicked off the first Revolutionary War in our country. Also, from my San Antonio, this had almost a very similar thing go down earlier this week in Almost Park in Texas. There was an arrest that set off a wave of gun ordinance repeals in San Antonio suburbs. So what these cities did was they had these ordinances in place saying you can't have open carry. This was in defiance of Texas laws passed by the state legislature allowing for open carry. So now they're all repealing these laws once they're facing lawsuits. So all three of the ordinances were in clear violation with state law, which allows individuals to openly carry long guns without a license. Texas also prohibits municipalities from preempting state law by regulating the transfer, ownership, or carrying of firearms. So the municipalities, they can't contradict the state law. It's beautiful. Well, they did. They passed these ordinances, and now they all, just three municipalities now have rolled back their ordinances saying, oops, just kidding. So we'll continue to watch that. But this gun debate keeps going on and on. It's actually taking place at our academia, if you want to call it that. Merriam-Webster, they are the ultimate source for defining words, right? Well, they've redefined this week. They redefined assault weapon. On its website, the top dictionary resource, Merriam-Webster, has changed the definition of an assault rifle to where it now includes most modern sporting rifles that are popular in the United States. So Updated in March of 2018, just this last month, Merriam-Webster defines an assault rifle as any of various intermediate-range magazine-fed military rifles, such as the AK-47, that can be set for automatic or semi-automatic fire. Also, a rifle that resembles a military assault rifle but is designed to allow only semi-automatic fire. So they've added that. A rifle which resembles a military assault rifle but is designated or designed to allow only semi-automatic fire, that is now an assault weapon. Interesting. They're just redefining words. So a listener wrote in to them in response saying, your change to the definition of assault rifle is an error. The original definition was correct. In cases where certain words take on colloquial definitions that come into widespread unchallenged use, I see that a change can be appropriate. But in this instance, for a definition which is technical in nature and the colloquial change is highly challenged, it is most definitely not appropriate. If you want to remain the most trusted dictionary, you should refrain from arbitrary changes such as this one. Good. Well said. Okay, if you guys are in the need for a web hosting service, we use TLC Web Hosting and they've taken awesome care of us. Patriot owned, based right out of the American Redoubt, believe it or not, and very trusted patriots. So if you are looking for web, their prices are extremely reasonable. They took care of our SSL certificate. They took care of it all. So anyway, I just thought somebody said, thank you for mentioning that. That was because we are just redesigning we're looking for a new host for our website. We're redesigning our website for our business. And my task was Monday morning to start looking for web hosting. And then you mentioned it on the show on Sunday night. So that was awesome. Thank you. So, yeah, pretty cool stuff. They're good people. All right, let's take a break. Come back with segment two. I've got an interview coming up here when we come back, so don't go away.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. The 51st state, Liberty State, there are a lot of myths going around, and one of them is that it's unconstitutional to split a state. Well, that's simply ridiculous. Article 4, Section 3 of the United States Constitution says that no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. So all it takes is a vote of the House and Senate at both the national and state level to make it happen, and it's happened before. 1792 Kentucky, 1820 Massachusetts, 1863 West Virginia, and this is not to mention on the world stage, Catalan, Scotland, Ireland, and Brexit. You see, reestablishing boundaries to better represent the values, traditions, cultures, and customs of a people is actually a very normal phenomenon and the proper way to protect and preserve those beliefs for generations to come. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea Republican.
Segment two here, brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Our friends up there in the northern part of the panhandle of North Idaho, helping patriots just like you get strategically relocated to the uppermost part of the panhandle in North Idaho. If that's where you got your sets, Boundary County, Bonner County, give them a call and they will take care of you. Check them out on the website at SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. And also, if you guys haven't done so already, look at the Red Pill Expo. We got the banner on the website. There is a posting on RadioFreeRedoubt.com. And also, we'll probably put this in the highlights resources posting again for this show. Don't forget, if you are going to attend that in June, that's June 21st to the 23rd for general admission, it's a little spendy, but you can, you can't use the discount code. Darn it. It's 15% off that ended March 30th. Darn it. Well, I did mention it before, so hopefully you took advantage of it. Now, if it's a little steep for you, the price, the admission. There's going to be some awesome speakers. I got to get that whole rundown again because I can't remember them all off the top of my head. But we will be there. Matt Shea and Patriot Radio will be there. Amron will have a booth there. That's going to be pretty cool. We're really looking forward to that. But they're having a live stream option for you that will save a ton of money. It's a great way for full coverage, the 2 days of coverage. You can pitch in with some friends to have a barbecue and sit around and watch the Red Pill Expo on live streaming. So, yeah, hopefully that will help you out there. Okay, as I mentioned, we have a guest, a special guest. This all started coming to me. I became aware of this just very recently. I didn't understand the significance of it, but this is very relevant right now. I know there's a lot of stuff going on with Second Amendment issues and things like that that are a lot more fun to talk about, but it almost serves as a distraction because there are ways that socialists, leftists, statists, globalists are moving in to take from us much of the things that are just as critical to us as Second Amendment issues. And this is land rights. It is power and control through just very divisive ways, very sneaky ways. And this affects all of us in the American Redoubt directly, Montana, Idaho, Eastern Oregon, and Eastern Washington very directly, and possibly even Wyoming and beyond. This affects so many more people. And it is about power. It's about seizing power under the auspices of clean energy and green energy and this green cult that we see emerging. So it's a pleasure for me to bring on a special guest, David Bolinius. He is a geologist. He has a master's degree in geology. He's been doing this for more than 45 years. Also has a master's degree in business administration. He has been prolifically writing and speaking, traveling around the American Redoubt, the whole inland Pacific Northwest, warning people about this merger that's taking place between Avista Utilities and this Canadian power company. And so we're going to be talking about that. Dave Bolinius, I hope I pronounced that correctly. Thank you for being with us on Radio Free Redoubt.
Okay. Yes. Thank you, John. Yeah, good to be here talking to your audience. So, yes, I want to talk about the acquisition of Avista Corporation based in Spokane, Washington, by Hydro One based in Toronto, Ontario. Now, so I'm just going to read some things here that I thought were very important points. The first one is that through this acquisition, the Ontario government, through the Parliament and members of Parliament, will be controlling everything that Avista does. People may not understand that or don't even realize, but those folks in the Parliament have already stated this is going to happen, whether Avista likes it or not. So those decisions, anything about Avista, including rate setting, the members of the board of directors of the new Avista holding company that will be owned by Ontario will be controlled by the government of Ontario. So I want to just state from the beginning some of the conclusions. And the information I'm telling you about comes from many, many articles that are mainly in print and available on the Internet that come from Ontario. Now, none of this information has been publicized by Avista, even though they've had several newspaper articles about this. And in fact, I was just reading their annual report that came just in the mail yesterday, and they don't say anything about what it's going to be like after Hydro One takes over. So the first item I want to stress is the marriage between the two companies will provide absolutely no advantages to the utility customers. And so, as you can see, the deal provides numerous risks and advantages, as I'll talk about, many disadvantages that are not divulged, or perhaps Avista is simply not aware, and that's certainly a possibility. I really don't fault Avista a great deal, but I don't think that any of the folks that we've talked with at Avista have ever visited and talked with Hydro One customers in Ontario. In Ontario, I'm going to talk a lot about that because Ontario will be controlling Avista in the future if this acquisition continues. In Ontario, they have had a significant rise in electric rates. They've gone from what we have here in the Northwest, but based on hydropower, of about 7 or 8 cents per kilowatt hour. This year, the rates in Ontario are 61 cents per kilowatt hour. So that's nearly a 1,000% increase. And this is since 2009 when the Ontario Parliament passed their Green Energy Act. And as I'm going to talk about their Green Energy Act, there's a part one, they call it round one, and then round two. And so they've already gone through the round one, and so we've had that rate increase of nearly, or those folks have had that rate increase of nearly 1,000% in about 9 or 10 years since 2009.
Okay, I just want to interject something here real quick, because this is very interesting that you're bringing this up, because there was an article from CBC out of Canada that is announcing this Hydro One blockbuster deal to purchase Avista for $6.7 billion in cash. And what they're saying, there's two things here that are jumping out at me that are bothering me in light of the facts that I'm learning about this merger. One is they're saying how proud they are that they're going to grow their business to become a North American leader. They've used this term several times, a more focused energy leader. I don't know what they mean, a leader of what, but the part that's jumping out is where it says the company said there will be no job losses as a result of the merger, and customer rates will not be affected by any of the costs associated with the transaction. So it's very misleading, because what we're seeing is all of the data that you've provided, and I've looked through this, I'm not even done, there's mountains of it, is pointing completely to the opposite. Not only rates, well, they're deferring this for like 5 years, and then these people are getting nailed to the wall from 7 cents per kilowatt to almost 70, like 67 cents per kilowatt, and the ramifications from that. So what you're saying is, it's complete opposite of what they're telling the public. But you've got the documentation to prove it. So
yeah,
I just wanted to say that as we go forward here, the general public is not being, they're not being genuine or honest with the public in these news releases announcing this merger. It's huge.
Yeah. So, I would say that the statement you made about the transaction cost, for the transaction, they will not be affected. The impacts are going to come later.
Right.
Because as this lady, the member of the provincial parliament, her name is Diane Verniel, and she has a YouTube video available that I have on my slide 44. She says, the province will unlock the assets in Hydro One in the future. They're going to sell part of Hydro One, but they will maintain control of Hydro One, its board of directors. We'd maintain veto power, nominating authority, and they will set rates. And they would then have complete regulatory control. Even though the province does not own the holding company that owns Avista. So this lady is saying that all of the actions that happen in the Northwest, where Avista customers are affected, will be controlled out of the Ontario government. And so everything I'm going to talk about, you can put in that perspective. So what's happening in Ontario, we can almost promise it's going to happen in the Northwest, but to Avista customers. And so that's why I'm going to talk a lot about what has happened to Avista customer or to Ontario's customers of Hydro One. And you can translate that into what's going to happen to Avista customers based upon this member of Parliament, Diane Verniel's YouTube video and her promise that they're going to take control whether we like it or not. So the transaction won't affect people, but it's what comes later.
Okay. And what they're using to justify these rates as well. And what's the impetus for these mergers? Not just this merger, like it's a one-time thing. They are buying all of these American power companies up across the country. This is very relevant because of our hydropower in the Pacific Northwest. So
yes, the driving force of the purchase of American utilities by Ontario utility companies or other private companies is Ontario's Green Energy Act. And they're doing this because they're just simply terrified of carbon dioxide in Ontario.
Hmm.
And there are some other reasons in their history of the utility that I may not have time to get into, but let me just find my the information I have about a gentleman by the name of Maury Strong. Now, Maury Strong was an official in the United Nations, and he had a lot of other business dealings. But Maury Strong was also involved with many companies in the oil business in Ontario. And then he later became the chief executive officer at the predecessor to Hydro One, called Ontario Hydro. Now, Mr. Strong's idea, and I'm just going to read the statement he made when he was working for UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, as Mr. Strong was the organizer of the Rio de Janeiro Climate Summit in 1992. And at that summit, he said, "We may get to the point," and I'm quoting, "to the point where the only way of saving the world will be for industrial civilization to collapse. And isn't it our job to bring that about?" End of quote.
Wow.
And so this is the reason that this gentleman is the father of global warming, or the father of climate change. And so there's a constant push to manipulate climate data and hype natural disasters as proof of fossil fuels and to end the use of fossil fuels and to show that man's responsible for all of the weather happenings we have or everything else, including polar bears and so on. So that this is the root of the Green Energy Act in Ontario, because Mr. Strong lived in Ontario, and he was the chief of executive officer of the predecessor for Hydro One. So they have now, in the Green Energy Act, codified his legacy, which you can follow through a lot of literature to show is a complete lie. So that kind of puts everything in perspective.
Yeah.
So let's move on to what has happened in Ontario to Ontario customers since the passage of the 2009 Green Energy Act. Since, in about a nine-year period from 2009 to 2015, energy prices in Ontario increased 146%. And much of this has to do with the ending of all of their coal-fired electric plants and the close down of those plants, and then the cost of that. And then they started building wind turbines to replace that power. Well, they soon found that they had too much, and they paid far too much money, because they paid 400% more for wind turbine electricity than they would for normally procured electricity on the competitive market. So as a result, the rates in Ontario, if you can get them now from the Internet, are just the rates of the electric usage. But what they don't tell you about is they have something called a global adjustment fee. And the global adjustment takes care of all of the costs for the close down of the coal plants, the building of the wind turbine plants throughout throughout the province. And they now have something on the order of 3,000 to 5,000 wind turbines. And they now have so much power that they can't use it. And so they dump it to adjacent states in the U.S. or to provinces in Canada, mainly because the electricity comes at a time when they don't need it, and then the wind turbines are are down when they do need electricity. So it's not been a good arrangement.
Right.
Now, the result is that since 2009 to today, the Hydro One rate, if you take in consideration their usage part of the rate, the additional charges for distribution, smart meters, rate riders, demand charges, shutdown of coal plants, and the building of renewables, has jumped now from it was just a few cents to 61 cents per kilowatt hour.
Wow.
And so if you can multiply your usage, which in Ontario is about 800 kilowatt hours per month times 61 cents, I didn't do that, but it's a very high number. And so I'll just go through a couple comments here that have come from people living in Ontario.
Yeah, I wanted to throw out there, these are not projections. This is not theory. This is not dogma. This is not scare tactics of what they might do. What you're describing is what people are experiencing today.
That's correct.
This is reality.
I have provided you, John, my lengthy report, and I've got about 165 references on that report. So I'm reading just summary of some of those references. So I'm going to tell you about how people there in Ontario are reacting now. One lady in, she is in Timmins, Ontario. She says her rates have gone up now to $800 per month, and she just has a trailer she lives in. I'm looking at the picture. It's about 60 feet long. She says Hydro One has cut off power to her neighbors and that the rates have gone up about 100% in the last decade. The second one, the mayor of Echo Bay, Ontario, Mayor Lynn Watson, says that hydro rates there are killing small business. And I speak of hydro rates because those folks call their electric bill their hydro bill. And the second comment he has is that seniors on fixed incomes can't afford their power bills. And the third part is that appeared on a YouTube video. They were showing this market in Echo Bay. They had to close all of their refrigerated food sections, including everything that had to have refrigeration, frozen or just cool food. So their market was reduced by about two-thirds because they cannot afford to pay for electricity to run compressors and refrigeration. Another comment comes from an elderly couple in Moosonee, Ontario, Dorothy Wynn and her husband Ken. She says that paying the hydro bill is very difficult. I'm quoting, "We have to do without besides the high cost of living and all that, to make ends meet is very hard. So to conserve energy, they unplug everything they can and use the barbecue outside for cooking." Now, in other articles I read, people have completely gone off the grid, that is, off the electric grid. They're relying on barbecues and their own private generators.
I've heard that.
And one of the main comments that they have is that they have to decide whether to heat their home or feed their children. And that was the same comment that Dorothy Wynn had in Moosonee, Ontario. They have to choose whether they're going to heat their homes or have food. The United Way's executive director in Bruce Gray, Ontario, which is near Moosonee, said that Wynn's story is absolutely fits the definition of energy poverty, that people are making these massive lifestyle adjustments without any results. They're angry, and some people have to walk away from their home mortgages because their power bill is more than their mortgage. Through 2015, Hydro One had disconnected 60,000 households in their catchment area, they call it. Now, the Ontario Energy Minister, which is equivalent to maybe our cabinet minister in the United States, hesitates to call this a crisis, but the United Way director, Bob Dobbin, says it's totally a crisis. You know, if we had 30 people in the community with measles, that would be a crisis. We had, you know, she says, 33,000 people sick with E. coli in Walkerton several years ago. That was a crisis. So we have 60,000 people disconnected now, and they're hydro. That's not a crisis. So she certainly disagrees with the minister.
Yeah, 60,000 people have lost. They've lost their power. They've had their power cut off because the bill has become so astronomical. This is a Canadian power company that is purchasing Avista, which reaches almost all of the American redoubt states. And they've got their eyes set on several other power companies across the United States. They're being compelled to purchase these power companies. So this is not a Canadian problem. Yawn, doesn't affect me. Why am I worried about this? Because, David, what are they telling the people back in 2009 about their power bill? Were they told your power bill is going to go up 1,000% in the next seven to nine years?
Yeah, good question. I don't have an answer to that. When they started making new regulations and buying expensive power, they were in Ontario. Nobody knew how much money the energy minister was going to spend, and they just seemed to have a bottomless pit of money. But they just made contracts. They didn't have to have the money at the time. They made promises, and the promises have done this to the people. And I might say the 60,000 number of disconnects was in 2015. Today, the recent number published on the internet was there are about 239,000 people that have been disconnected in Ontario. So that adds to what was a smaller number 2 years ago. Now, I might say that it doesn't sound like a large number compared to a population of 13 million, but I might point out that about 10 million of those people lie near the Metro Toronto area and within reach of the gas pipelines that can provide space heating that's more cheap or cheaper than will be the electricity that people in the remote areas have to use for space heating.
Right.
So if you take out about 10 million people that have natural gas, and so we have about 3 million less, the 239,000 is nearly 10% of the rural households that have been disconnected.
Rural. Interesting.
Yes.
Because this comes out of the Rio United Nations, essentially Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 meetings. One of the goals that they've stated is to reduce the population of humans in rural communities and get them into the cities. And it's interesting that it appears they could be using power as the tool to do that, electrical power, because they cannot afford the power. They can move into the city where the gas is plentiful and it's affordable. Get out of the country, right? That's kind of what's happening here.
I guess that's what happens. Now, you know, I'm a farmer, and I need to live in the area near my farm. You know, we produce a lot of wheat for you know, pizza, had other uses for bread and so on. So we need to have carbon dioxide. And so to that, I want to mention a little bit about my experience. My graduate work dealt with carbon dioxide in the limestone deposits that I studied in the tropics. So, and I followed this all of my career. Really, carbon dioxide is our friend. And in fact, it is what I would term our mother gas. Right now, the concentration of carbon dioxide is so low that it's near the deficit level that it's ever been in Earth's history. And many people don't know that 98% of our carbon dioxide comes from natural sources, from the oceans, from soils, from microorganisms in the ocean. They're by far the greatest source of carbon dioxide. humans, in all of their activities, only produce about 2% of the carbon dioxide. So to conclude that we need to completely end our emissions of carbon dioxide is completely wrong, because we cannot impact the carbon dioxide supply.
Right.
And in fact, I might go a little bit further. The carbon dioxide is responsible for the explosion of biological life on our planet. And in fact, they were responsible for the explosion of vegetation during the time the dinosaurs were here. That's the reason we had such large animals at that time.
Hmm.
And of course, carbon dioxide is a plant fertilizer. The more we have, the better.
Oh,
the
yes.
Better we have for our crop production. If we had no carbon dioxide, everybody would die, because carbon dioxide is necessary for plant growth and producing meat eventually for humans and consumption of all foods.
Yeah, and carbon dioxide is also very critical for exercising power and control over the population of the Earth. That's what they're using.
That's the way it seems.
My
as I mentioned, Maurice Strong was the CEO for Ontario Hydro, so his thinking, even though it was completely faked at that time, was a way to control populations. And now we have a movement about to what's called unitize. It's really called harmonizing all power systems in North America between Canada and the U.S.
Right.
And so that by the time we get everything harmonized, then it'll be an easy step for the United Nations to just take over one agency and take over everyone's supply and dictate whatever they want.
Well, it sure seems to be happening. Once President Trump said we don't need the Paris Accords, they don't apply to us. We're not going to participate in your green cult celebrations. They found a backdoor way to come in.
That's right. Yeah, we escaped the Paris Climate Agreement, and when I talk about that, I say that escaping the Paris Climate Agreement is like re-winning World War II a second time.
Right.
Because going the opposite direction would have been so devastating to the Western world that we wouldn't recover for maybe decades. And so this is, like you say, this is the back door of getting a Paris Agreement of another color.
Yes.
To control our power systems.
Yeah, another shade of green. Oh, wow. Okay, well.
So,
Well, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and let's take a break real quick. This is some really good stuff. I know there's so much that you have so much documentation. This is not hyperbole. We're not, this is not just alarmist stuff that can't be backed up and conjecture. It is fact. It's factual stuff. It's something that can be stopped. It's going to be very difficult, but this is not written in stone yet. This merger, it's going to depend on the states. And I know you're speaking in the American Redoubt, specifically Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, coming up this coming week, this Wednesday. This is why I pushed some of the other topics off to the side. So we're going to talk about that and a lot more when we come back. A fascinating topic, very timely, and something that we should be paying attention to. While they're rattling our Second Amendment cage right now, we're paying attention to that. We need to be watching what's coming through the back door as well. So, David Bolanias, thank you for being with us. If you'd stick around, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a moment here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message.
In the schools, textbooks are rewritten to tell the communist version of
history. Every day, every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply
to change the meaning of words like religion and duty and democracy. The communists set out to brainwash the people.
We do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
14-year-old Polish children learn from textbooks like these.
All right, welcome back. This is segment three. Segment three is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. They have designs to help keep you safe and to help you thrive on your property. Planning with water access, food supply, energy production, and even security features built into your property. If you're looking for a new property, or if you've just bought property, you'd like to have a consulting service come in and help you get the most out of your property. Or if you are shopping for a piece of property, you want some professionals to go over that with you, then check them out at strategiclandscapedesign.com. All right, we are joined by David Bolinius, a master's degree in geology. Has been in geology for over 45 years. The evidence of him being a master researcher is abundant. There's multiple articles here talking about just this one topic, the dangers of this Avista merger with Hydro One, a Canadian-based firm that is implementing power company, which is implementing this globalist environmental power agenda, and they're working their way into the United States. They're very excited about this being leaders. They're calling themselves leaders in the power industry. What they mean is taking control. It affects all of us. There are several articles here. Several articles, one in particular over at Redoubt News. We're going to have all this linked in our highlights and resources posting over at Redoubt News. Should Avista Corporation become Hydro One? Posing the question there. Also, some great articles over at GemStatePatriot.com. They do a great job as well. We're going to have all of the stuff linked for you so you'll be able to go and read it for yourself. And all of the documentation, all the research is right there. David, thank you for being with us here at Radio Free Redoubt.
Yeah, thank you, John. I might say that the places where I've given this talk in the past that I'm going to give on Wednesday in Coeur d'Alene, I've also given it to the property owners, called Citizens Alliance for Property Rights in Washington. And we have also a YouTube video that I recorded there. So I'm going to be talking to the private property owners in Idaho coming this Wednesday. And that really the title of my talk is what advantages are there to this acquisition? Because certainly there are no advantages to customers.
Right.
And as I mentioned, I just saw the Avista annual report that arrived in the mail 2 days ago. And it doesn't mention anything about what I say because they're perhaps they're just unknowledgeable of it. I really don't want to fault them too much, but there's not been a lot of investigation into this acquisition that they're going to put in front of all of the utility commissions, and they haven't voted on it yet. So there is time
right
for people to respond to their utility commissions to place their vote whether we should have this acquisition carry through or not.
Right.
So what I did want to talk about was the Green Energy Act in Ontario. Now, I mentioned in the earlier segment about the comments from various residents there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went, so the people in Ontario call the Green Energy Act round one and round two. And I thought round one was closing down coal plants to and building huge numbers of wind turbines, supposedly to replace the coal plants.
I
also lecture about.
Can I jump in there real quick?
Renewable energy and why that's not very efficient either.
Can I jump in there real quick? Sure. You might already be prepared to talk about this, but one of the other claims is that it's not going to result in any lost jobs. But there's an article in the research that I believe you provided showing that they are planning on shutting down the coal-fired plants in Colstrip, Montana. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So they're going to shift all that over, yeah.
In forcing closure of half of Avista's supply of coal-fired electricity in the Colstrip area. And, of course, Hydro One will insist on closing the other half, and that represents one-third of Avista's electric supply. And so to think that that supply will be provided by wind turbines is completely false, because there's a lot of information known about wind turbines. They cannot provide the electricity we need.
Right.
And they can't do it, certainly, when we want it.
Yeah, when the demand isn't as high, they're producing an abundance of it. When the demand for electricity is high, the wind turbines are not producing enough to keep up with the demand. And then when the demand is low, they're cranking it out. Whereas they're trying to dump it, right? Is that correct?
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
Might just give one example here. In Washington and Oregon, we have 46 wind turbine farms. And if you look at the records of their power production, you will see very large holes in at times they don't provide any electricity. Some of these gaps are 2 weeks long when they're completely still, and they're still because they're weather inversions. And so everything is still. To think that you can build more wind turbines and still produce the power is completely false thinking, because when there are weather inversions, everything is still. If you have a million turbines, you still cannot produce electricity if the weather's not going to cooperate.
Right. The only other option would be to store it, but that's not even practical when you're dealing with this much power.
Not. They're trying that now, and it's so far been unsuccessful.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just list the costs that people in Ontario have sustained so far. The total cost for round two, and they still owe about three-fourths of this cost, is $172 billion and this cost is to rework their electric system. And, of course, wind turbines have not stepped in. The real problem with wind turbines is when they're not still, you have to have, or when they are quiet, there's no wind, you have to have a backup source. And so that means it's coming from coal-fired plants or gas or hydroelectric. And so the point I want to make is, why do we need two wind turbines and another when we can just do with one, either coal or natural gas or hydropower? And so the wind turbines provide absolutely no advantage.
Well, okay, I know that in the Northwest we have an abundance of – we're a major producer of hydroelectric power. And it's also my understanding from some briefings that I've gotten recently that they do not even have all of the turbines running. If they could open up those other turbines on all the dams, it would actually produce more power, which they're not even doing. So have you heard hydropower's stance on what their intentions are with hydroelectric power? Are they leaning more toward removing some of these dams, or have they even spoken to that?
Well, some forces like Sierra Club want to remove the dams. And others want to, do other things. So I really don't have an answer to that question.
Okay. Okay.
But related to it, in this acquisition, if Ontario Hydro succeeds in buying Avista, Hydro One and the province of Ontario will control all of the hydroelectric plants on Avista's network. And there are 12 hydroelectric dams, some of those are in Alaska, amount to 1,039 megawatts of capacity. And so that means that the local people in the Avista service area territory will no longer own those plants. And so who's going to be the regulatory agency over the plants? It's going to be the province of Ontario. So promises the lady that was the member of parliament in Ontario that I mentioned is speaking, had been speaking on a YouTube video.
Have you heard from any of our United States representatives, senators, anybody in the United States side of the border say anything to the contrary, that they're not going to allow Ontario to force regulations that's going to have that type of an adverse effect? Is there anybody advocating on the United States side of the border countering what they claim their intentions are up in Canada?
No, but no one that I know is. But if you know, if those folks would have looked at the information that I've been able to gather, they might have a different opinion. So I suppose they've been listening to Avista and Hydro One and just been convinced by their arguments. But so my argument is there isn't any way that any customer in the Avista territory will benefit, and likely their power rates will be going up perhaps at the rate they have been in Ontario.
And you're basing that on their prior performance?
I'm basing that on, yeah, the performance in Ontario.
Yeah. We've seen a pattern of them coming into an area, and then the over a period of under a decade, the individual citizens' power bills are going up 1,000%, roughly.
Yeah, right. Right. And we mentioned in the earlier segment that many of the Canadian companies are buying U.S. utilities, and that was published on Forbes.com. Forbes also listed about 10 other companies at that time, about a year ago, that were future targets for acquisition. So we really don't know who's been acquired by the Canadians to satisfy their Green Energy Act. Now, the reason that they have to take action now is because Ontario has promised that they will reduce their carbon dioxide level to a point 15% by year 2020, and then they're going to reduce it by 80% by the year 2050. So now one can use forecasting, or those numbers for forecasting, and then forecast the impact on electric rates. Now, this reduction in carbon dioxide levels from emissions from their activities will drive electric rates even higher. They're already 61 cents, and so they'll be much, much higher, and they're going to be using cap and trade of carbon credits to accomplish this. So this is what's called by the local people in Ontario round two of their Green Energy Act. And just to give you one number of what the impact will be, by 2050, which is, that's only 32 years away, the impact due to cap and trade will add another $3,247 to the cost of electricity. This is per month.
Wow.
So we already have 61 cents per kilowatt hour, and they can't afford it. There will be no one using electricity if cap and trade is permitted to continue. Now, I might just mention a few things here about what's happened so far, even in this round one that's happening in Ontario.
Good.
I'm jumping around a little bit here, but just to tell you a bit about Hydro One's history. Hydro One and the Ontario Energy Board that dictates conditions to them all operate as a monopoly. they serve the energy ministry as their fiduciary duty, then they're, and of course they're unresponsive to shareholders or unresponsive to customers, because customers have been complaining about high energy rates now for several years. Hydro One continues to be inefficient, and they charge ratepayers more money while their systems, the electric systems, continue in decline. Their outages have been 30% longer and 24%, or excuse me, they're 30% more frequent and 24% longer. So I think I've just about covered most everything. I might mention that the companies that have been, utility companies that have been acquired by Canadians have been acquiring U.S. utilities. They spent $28 billion as of February 2017. And so other acquisitions have certainly happened since that time.
Yeah. This is not all just Hydro One, right? These are all these Canadian companies are trying to be in compliance with this system, and they're going after American utility companies because this is what I'm gathering. They can show improvement where they can to be in compliance. They can take something that's, in their estimation, high carbon usage and reduce that, and that's where the brownie points are. When they can take something that's dirty and make it clean, that's where the rewards come. Correct?
That's correct. So they're required to do that by the Green Energy Act. The other large utility in the Toronto area is called Toronto Hydro. And so together with Hydro One, they provide electricity to the bulk of the customers in Ontario. So all of the utilities in Ontario are impacted, and they're reaching or they're causing their impact to move across the international boundary to the United States.
Okay, what is the reward? What's the carrot dangling in front of them to make them comply with this? What's the driving force?
All I can say is it's mandated by the Ontario law, and so there isn't any carrot involved. It's all forced.
Huh. So in order to comply, this is what I'm trying to put together in my mind here. Now, it's obvious they are complying. So I'm wondering what would make them go outside of Canada to seek out new power companies to show these improvements, quote unquote, that they're making in reducing carbon emissions. Are they mandated by Canadian law to purchase foreign power companies, or is there some other incentive, a financial incentive, or?
Yes, I'm sorry. I guess I forgot to mention that point. You're right. So there, in the cap and trade, there's a choice. You can either cap your emissions, or you can trade something, and so the. So the carrot, or the incentive, is that the Canadians are buying clean energy in the United States that they can trade and not have to pay money. Now, Hydro One has an $8 billion bill due by 2020, but they can avoid paying that bill by buying Avista. And Avista's hydroelectric facilities.
Ah, and shutting down the coal plants.
So they can finance that through the financial markets, and they're going to be financing by debt and equity, and so they really can benefit two ways. They'll get pay less for the purchase of a Vista than they would for buying credits from Jerry Brown's California Climate Exchange or Al Gore's part-owned Chicago Climate Exchange by buying a Vista for, I think the price is $6.7 billion. And then Hydro One will own all of those facilities. And, of course, then the Ontario government can dictate how they use them or perhaps even who gets to use them. Who knows what the future holds? You know, we certainly can't predict the future. But we do have good information to show what's happened in Ontario, and we can somehow predict what will happen in the future to new customers of Hydro One, which will be a Vista.
Yeah.
Now, I could mention a few comments about cap and trade, about how bad it really is for people that are subject to it.
Let's shed some light on this here in the last about 5 minutes. And then I want to also talk about your some of your other presentations you're going to be putting on and some of the action items for the listeners, what they can do to get involved. So, yeah, let's talk about that. Cap and trade. What does that really mean to the average Joe out there?
Okay. So a utility would have a choice in our Ontario law to either not to cap or to not produce any more emissions than they are currently. Or they have the other choice is to trade something so that they don't have to pay money if they want to raise their emissions. And so they would be trading something in the carbon exchange in California or Chicago or Ontario to allow them to go above their current level of emissions. And so that's how it works. So it's either cap emissions or trade something so that they can exceed their emissions.
What a scam.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Let me have to take about 2 minutes, and I'm going to talk about some of the comments that have been published in various sources about cap and trade. Some people call it generally a fake, somewhere between a fake, a farce, and a fraud.
Right.
So really terrible comments. So cap and trade is said to penalize emissions because it masks the negative economic consequences behind government's rhetorical benefits of their new programs. New programs would be the new Ontario law, of course.
Right.
So cap and trade permits one to emit more emissions, and so that's really an arbitrary scarcity on the customers based upon government fiat. And so the new level is completely unrelated to supply of electricity. And, of course, then customers are forced to restrict their use of fuel for generating electricity, not because there's less supply, but because of a number dreamed up by bureaucrats.
Right. Some arbitrary
number. Cap and trade relies on a European-style political scheme to increase costs and therefore justly is viewed as a tax, the lifeblood of our economy. And, of course, now if this happens, the politicians can brag about it, but they can feign or pretend that there's a benefit when really there is none at all.
Right.
And one of the last points I want to make about this is that cap and trade disproportionately harms the poor and low-income families, perhaps in the lower quartile of income levels. For instance, a 15% reduction in carbon dioxide by forcing emissions to be reduced translates to a 15% reduction of their incomes. Huh. Now, President Obama wanted to decrease our carbon dioxide by 83%, and so those folks would have their incomes reduced by 83%. That was the objective of the Paris Climate Agreement. So if we have cap and trade here coming from Ontario, the same result will happen as the Paris climate would have brought to us. So that's kind of a summary of how bad cap and trade is.
Yeah, I thank God that Hillary did not get in. I don't know how much longer we have, whether it's a couple of years or 6 years. But I know they're wringing their hands to get some globalist-minded person in there after Trump is out. And, boy, are they going after him. So this is not over. This is, they're just getting warmed up. It's very frustrating and also so deceptive. Somebody brought up a point about how this could affect our national security and our undermine our military. Is that something that you might be familiar with, or can you speak to that?
You know, I really can't, but at this point, I think people can imagine other areas where they're familiar, where the lack of electricity or the cost of electricity will impact other sections of our economy.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, there are, you know, vast impacts that we haven't even realized yet. When it comes to the cost of electricity, and if normal people can't afford it, you know, certainly other large organizations are going to have increased costs, and they're going to have to, you know, pay one cost or another, mm-hmm. and so one cost will have to be foregone.
Yeah. So now let's talk about what the average person can do out there. Who do they need to contact? And what do they tell them?
Well, I would say there are two places. You could either contact your legislator, either the state legislator or your legislator in Washington or senator, and object to this acquisition. Or you can write comments to the utility commission in your state where this action is taking place. Idaho, Montana, Washington, Oregon, or Alaska all have utility commissions, and so you could register an objection there. And of course, we could demonstrate in front of someone that would take notice in front of the press that doesn't seem to be.
The alternative media are willing to cover this, but your slipstream media doesn't want to pay attention to it. Now, have you been able to, or have you even attempted at this point to gain an audience with the powers that be at Avista, or with some of our, the problem is the energy commissioners are not elected. They're unaccountable. There's been a great deal of breach of trust, I guess, in our government, especially among bureaucracies where they're not held accountable. And people are suspicious. You know, is there somebody being paid off to approve this? Is there some other benefit? Have you been able to gain audience with Avista or with any of the elected officials to inform them of this this acquisition, the dark side to this?
Well, we met with two of the government affairs officials with Avista, and they seemed completely disinterested in our comments.
Sure.
And I provided them the same information you received, John. And then as far as the utility commissions, they're really not manned by folks that understand the entire problem that we're seeing here than I can see. As you can see, it's a very complicated, multifaceted that has tentacles going in several directions.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no one at Avista understands this because they're manned by lawyers, accountants, executives, and engineers. So they don't understand why there's a problem that I can see and has really been demonstrated.
Well, $6.7 billion in cash could make you want to look the other way too?
I don't know. In Ontario, it seems like the legislators or parliamentarians there are acting just so they can stay in office, and mm-hmm. and I've seen that comment more than one time.
Sure.
That they're just buying power.
Right.
I can't see anything else happening. So I don't have all the answers.
Well, I'll tell you what, you do have a lot of answers, though. I'm looking through your documentation. There's really no way that we could do this. We spent an hour talking about this. You've got so much documentation, so much research. You could easily talk 4 or 5 hours on this. I could see this. There's so much more. And we've jumped around a little bit. You have a very methodical presentation that you give. So that is going to be, let's talk about that. This coming Wednesday, you've got probably several speaking engagements lined up, but the one coming up this week, Wednesday, time and place, time and location.
Yeah, the location is at the Coeur d'Alene Library, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. That's downtown Coeur d'Alene. I don't have a street address. I think people can find it knowing it's at the library.
Sure.
It's at starts at 6:00, but you should be there a little early because we're limited on the amount of time we have reserved for the room.
Okay.
So be there a little bit early, and you can pick up some flyers on my presentation. This is the third presentation I've made on this. I've had 3 or 4 published articles on it at various places, including Readout News.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
Gem State Patriot.
Yeah.
So I am a private property owner in Washington. My family comes from pioneers in the 1880s, moved into the area. So I'm trying to maintain what was promised as private property rights from the start.
Yeah. Well, God bless you for all your work, all the research that you've done. We definitely want to encourage folks to be there at 6 p.m. at the Coeur d'Alene Public Library if you are in the area. If not, we'll see what we can do about maybe trying to video that, and then also posting the YouTube video of the presentation that you gave in Ellensburg to the to CAPR, the was that the Coalition of Property Rights?
Citizens Alliance for
there
Property Rights.
Citizens Alliance. I was drawing a blank there. Thank you. So that would be really good.
One final comment. People will have opportunity in the near future because Avista will be holding public town hall meetings over the next month.
Yes.
And they were listed in the Spokesman Review newspaper.
That's right. There's one scheduled for the Spokane Valley, which is just 20 minutes away from Coeur d'Alene. So those will be coming up as well. Yeah, we'll make sure that we get that posted for folks.
Okay.
Try to find that as well. So do you have a website, or are you maintaining a blog or anything like that for this to host all of this information, or are you just relying on the articles as your outlets?
I'm just relying on the articles. No, I don't have a blog site. I don't know how to operate any more than email.
Okay.
So that's the limit of my expertise. I'm just so busy there and so busy with other things, farm and consulting, that I just can't do any more.
Understood. Okay. Well, we'll do our part to keep the information going out as things develop with this. I want to ask you to please keep me informed. Redoubt News, the Gem State Patriot, we'll be watching for all of that. And as developments come out, we'll pass it along.
Thank you, John.
All right. Thank you, sir. God bless you for all your work, and we'll be in touch.
Great. Okay. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye now.
Hey, this is Jordan Page, and you're tuned into Radio Free Readout.
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Readout, North Idaho. For years, we've specialized in locating and securing the best survivalist retreats in the most sustainable area America has to offer. The clean and abundant fresh water found in North Idaho's springs, creeks, lakes, and rivers are the primary reason folks come here, as nothing is more important than water. Excellent seasons, rich soils, and clean Rocky Mountain air make for an ideal growing environment with no threat of tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes. The best part of North Idaho is her people. Friendly conservatives with beliefs deeply rooted in the Constitution and a sense of community. I want to invite you and your family to join us here to secure a peaceful future in a place that will sidestep much of the chaos that we all know is coming. Call me today at 208-667-1776 or visit me online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us, revrealty.us, and may God bless you.
If there is any hope of restoring America, we cannot, as a free people, allow ourselves to be divided. Division is what the destroyers of liberty are counting on, and if that means, as a last resort, preserving those American ideals within the boundaries of the American Redoubt, there must be unity among the patriots. We must all hang together, or assuredly we shall all hang separately. That's what Benjamin Franklin said, and that's what I say too. I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Finally, this is segment four. Segment four brought to you by Works Holsters, Works LLC. For your custom holster design needs, made right here in the American Redoubt with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. Go to works.com to find out how they can serve you. And tell them thank you for supporting Radio Free Redoubt. Okay, now this week I was alerted by Pastor Sharam Hadian that they have... they put out an alert, Antifa, CARE, that's the Council on American Islamic Relations, and the SPLC joined forces to silence Christians. They have waged these new tactics against venues which are hosting these events to bring awareness about the threat of Islam, what their intent is. And the leftist communist Islamic partnership now that's forming are going after the venues and bombarding them with, you know, threats of potential lawsuits and other potential vague threats of, would hate to see something bad happen on your property, to see, you know, what would happen to your business, you know, this kind of stuff. Very vague stuff, but that's enough pressure that these, like hotels, for example, are saying, yeah, we don't want to have this event, canceling at the last minute, which the attacks come at the last minute. It's all strategic. But Pastor Sharam Hadian is going to talk about this. I want to share this video with you, the audio from it, and we'll put this in our highlights and resources posting as well for you to go check it out yourself. But this is pretty disturbing. It is the very real threat to Americanism and our heritage is this al-Hijra, this cultural jihad. They make no bones about it. It's very evident. The evidence is abundant to show that this is very deliberate and intentional, what the Islamists are planning to do to America, just like what they're doing in Europe. And so those that are trying to warn, put out the warning, the watchman on the wall, sounding the warning to alert our fellow countrymen of what's going on, are being shut down by the leftists and the communists and the Islamic coalitions that are forming. So very interesting. Okay, so anyway, I'll let him take it from here. So this is Pastor Sharam Hadian.
Hi, everyone. This is Pastor Sharam Hadian with the Truth and Love Ministry. I wanted to share with you today this special video announcement that I'm actually recording from the state of Minnesota. I've been here the last few days for some speaking engagements, and we were scheduled to have some other speaking engagements with Worldview Weekend, Brandon House's ministry, along also with Understanding the Threats, John Guandolo and Chris Gobbets. Our ministry, the Truth and Love Project, was supposed to be speaking in several cities along with them, and we were shut down. Who shut us down, folks? The Islamo-Marxist, fascist oppressors in this nation. The same groups that we've been warning you about, The same groups that we've been trying to travel around this nation and warn you about shut us down. How did that happen? Started with CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the front group for the Muslim Brotherhood. Then they've joined with the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC. They started putting on their website within the last 48 hours to put calls into the venues and the hotels that we were going to be speaking to get us shut down, to say we're going to protest, to potentially even hint at violence. Then they got Antifa involved. Antifa started getting their folks to call in and put pressure. And we know what Antifa does, right? We know their MO. They're domestic terrorists. And so because of this, in the last 48 hours, we got word that the event in Green Bay, Worldview Weekend's event in Green Bay, was canceled. The hotel pulled out within less than 36 hours. Then the hotel in Milwaukee canceled on us. A hotel where Brandon's been meeting for years. Then the city of Onalaska, where they were going to be meeting in La Crosse, canceled. And then finally, we decided, because the SPLC, that has listed our organization and many others as hate groups, they were calling local mosques, trying to get them riled up, to show up, to threaten our event, to protest our event, to make it dangerous. The hotel had already demanded that Brandon hire two police officers. It became too dangerous because Bloomington, Minnesota is a hotbed for Islamic radicalization. It is the number one, basically conglomeration of the Somali community. And it is the area where the most Somalis have been radicalized and have been going over to fight with ISIS and Al-Shabaab and so forth and so on. It was a dangerous place to begin with, and we did not feel we can trust law enforcement. The word that we got was the sheriff in that county has been compromised and is on the side of the jihadis. We were not sure if we could trust even the Bloomington Police Department. So we had to make a tough decision to finally cancel Bloomington. So folks, if you think that we are living in a free nation anymore, if you think this is the land of the free and the home of the brave, we better wake up soon. Religious liberty, the right of assembly, the right of our speech is gone. This is the MO now. This is the tactic that they are using to shut us down. And for the temporary time, it has worked, because they were able to intimidate these hotels and these venues to pull these contracts with less than 48 hours. There was no time to recover. There was no time to book somewhere else. And that's their MO. Are you ready for this, church? Are you ready for this, pastor? Are you ready for this, Christian? This is the new America that you're living in. And too many Christians are sitting in their churches. Too many pastors are sitting in their pulpits thinking they're safe, they're fine, everything's good to go, and it's going to be coming to your neighborhood soon. It's going to be in your face soon. And who is aiding and abetting these Islamo-Marxists? Who is aiding and abetting these Islamo-fascists? Because isn't this fascism? Doesn't this remind you of 1930s Germany all over again? Didn't the Muslim Brotherhood work with the Nazis in World War II? This is their MO. Who's working with them? The interfaith coalitions, the liberal churches, like the ELCA church that was trying to protest and shut my event down a couple nights ago in Montevideo, Minnesota. By the way, good news, they couldn't do it. They couldn't succeed. And an event that the organizers were expecting maybe 100, 270 showed up, exceeding the capacity of the room. 10 or more pastors were there from the local communities. And we were able to share the message that the interfaith is a lie, interfaith is a scam, interfaith is simply a Trojan horse for the Islamo-Marxists to come into the churches and destroy and corrupt our message. Folks, this is critical that we get these messages out. And on that night, God was victorious. We got the message out. We're planning on coming back in the fall, doing some training. They're not going to run us out of town. They may have had a minor victory here, but they are not going to run us out of town. In fact, we're already planning on when we're going to come back to Minnesota. We're going to regroup and come back stronger. Because while the door is open, we're not going away. We're not going away. So I wanted to bring this announcement to you. I wanted to share with you what's going on. By the way, these are the headlines. Look at this headline. Hamas-linked CARE joins with the SPLC. With who? With Christian and Jewish groups to fight what? Anti-Muslim bigotry. This is the MO, folks. They're going to these churches, mobilizing Christian activists to turn on who? To turn on you and me. conservative, Bible-believing Christians, we are the targets now. We're the targets. So this is their MO. We're not going away. And by the way, we are working on, I was on the phone with Brandon 2 hours yesterday. We are going to be working on a documentary. We're going to have national and international speakers put together a documentary on the Islamic threat, on the Muslim Brotherhood, on the Islamo-fascist coalition that's coming together, this Islamo-Marxist coalition. And, oh, by the way, we're going to be exposing the interfaith coalitions, including the likes of James White, who had this interfaith dialogue with Yasser Qadhi. They're more worried about Muslims being supposedly persecuted than the actual persecution of Christians that is happening around the world and now in America, folks. If what happened to us this last 48 hours doesn't show you that there is Christian persecution in America, I don't know what will, until they start arresting us, until they start coming in and shutting down our churches. Christian, wake up. Pastor, wake up. So stay tuned for more information about this documentary. We're already beginning the process of it. It's going to be filmed soon. And we're going to go on the offensive. We are not going to take this laying down. Just like we came after Sioux Falls last year, what happened to us there with the heavily armed Muslim man, we went on the offensive. We went and went public with it. We're going to go public with this. We're going to fight back because silence in the face of evil is evil itself. As believers, we cannot be silent. God bless you. Stay tuned. And by the way, please pray for our ministry. Please support the ministry. Allow us to continue to get this message out. Please pray and support Worldview Weekend and other ministries who are standing up. God bless you. We'll have more for you in the coming days. And keep up the good fight of the good faith.
All right, that's Pastor Shyram Hadian from Truth in Love Ministries based out of Spokane, Washington. He's on a speaking tour with several other speakers warning about the dangers of the Islamic jihadist, leftist, communist coalition, along with these interfaith leaders, supposedly faith, interfaith leaders that are helping to usher in. This is a perfectly used word, is the Trojan horse. It's what it is. It's the Trojan horse ushering in the invasion of Islam. So remember to lift them up in your prayers and support them, and just stay tuned. We're gonna be following this as well as all the other issues. So there's tons more I could go on and on about this, but I'm gonna let it go for now. You guys have a blessed week. Stay true, stay salty, stay training, stay in the Word. And don't waver. Stand firm with your values and your beliefs in place, and be ready to serve. So that's all I got. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. I am John Jacob Schmidt, and my name is your name too. Good night.